A woman wants to fill a prescription for the morning after pill at the local drugstore. The pharmacist believes that by dispensing that medication, he would participate in an abortion which violates his moral beliefs. Whose rights do you protect, and how? Drugstores are the new front line in the debate over abortion. While no one knows how often that scenario happens, cases have been reported from around the country, from California to Texas to Illinois. The policy of the American Pharmacists Association is that pharmacists can refuse to fill prescriptions as long as they make arrangements for the medication to be obtained some other way. But some pharmacists refuse to participate even to that extent. And when the prescription is for the morning after pill, time can be a critical element. At the moment, four states, Arkansas, Georgia, Mississippi, and South Dakota, have laws that allow pharmacists to refuse to fill prescriptions that violate their beliefs. Four other states, New Jersey, West Virginia, Missouri, and California, are currently considering laws that would require pharmacists to fill prescriptions as part of their professional duty. For most of this program, we're going to focus on this conflict that touches on so many deeply felt issues. During our first segment, we'll hear from a pharmacist who's made the choice to obey his conscience, and then from a state senator in California who believes that this is an issue of women's rights and is fighting to preserve them. We'll take your calls and questions afterwards. And we begin with pharmacist Gene Herr, who lost his job when he refused to fill a prescription for the morning after pill at a drugstore outside of Dallas last year. Gene Herr joins us from the studios of member station KERA in Dallas. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Oh, thank you.
I assume you'd thought about what you would do if this situation arose before the incident actually did come up?
Oh, yes, sir. I'd actually had already come to that conclusion several years prior and had actually also refused to dispense it probably five or six different times prior to this event.
And this one event got notoriety.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Was it a difficult decision for you?
It did take me back a little bit because I'd never refused it knowing that it was for a rape victim.
And this last incident was for a rape victim, yes.
Yeah, well, a gentleman brought in the prescription and said that it was for a rape victim, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And that caused a deeper quandary?
Well, yeah, basically, it came to me second because it actually was turned down by the other female pharmacist who's on duty at the same time. And I looked at it, and I was just thinking in my head, wow, this is really the worst case scenario. This is what's going to really test my resolve on this issue. But in the end, my resolve didn't change.
And you sent the man away to get his prescription filled somewhere else.
Well, he actually took the prescription away and left, but yeah.
Yeah. Did you tell him there's another place down the street?
No, I didn't really even have time to discuss that with him. He, as soon as I told him, he asked me why, and I explained my reasons that this medication could kill a child if the patient had conceived. And at that point, he just started yelling and was accusing me of judging him and things like that. And eventually, he just took the prescription, kind of yanked it out of my hand, and left the building saying that he was going to have our jobs.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, he did.
Yeah, he sure did.
You got fired.
Yes, sir.
Where do you draw the line on this? Would you sell, I mean, again, there's the time element with the morning after pill, but there are all kinds of contraceptives available, I assume, at the drugstore.
Right. I'm not against contraception. What I'm against now, the morning after pill, they call the morning after contraceptive pill, but that's the reason why they say that is because they're defining pregnancy as beginning an implantation, whereas mm-hmm. I believe pregnancy begins at conception, and I don't think there's any reason to arbitrarily define it at implantation. So I'm against participating in an abortion. I just don't feel that that's a good thing to do.
And that overrides your responsibilities, your duties as a pharmacist.
Well, no, actually, the duties of being a pharmacist involve doing no harm. And in this case, there were potentially two patients involved, and doing harm to one does not justify, in my mind, satisfying the other.
A doctor who took that same pledge, the Hippocratic Oath, made the determination that this is a perfectly proper prescription to hand out, and he gave it to the man.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the great thing about America is everybody's, allowed to have their own personal moral beliefs, and I frankly just disagree with that doctor.
I wonder, do you hear similar stories from others in your profession?
I haven't heard too many. The ones that I actually were working with. Of course, I know what their situation was and their personal experiences. And then a couple other maybe called me up and said, hey, yeah, we really appreciate you taking a stand here. And I don't hear a lot about it. I don't think it's really that common of an event anyway.
I wonder if it's being discussed in various state legislatures, which is why we're discussing it. But I wonder if, did you think about this before you became a pharmacist?
Well, no. Actually, when I became a pharmacist, which was about 10 years ago, 93, so I guess about 12 years ago, I was actually for abortion at that point. It wasn't until 1996, 97 when I became a Christian, and then my worldview really started to change, and my opinions on life and the dignity of life changed at that point. And so, when I went to pharmacy school, I was like many people. I had dollar signs flashing before my eyes, and it was mm-hmm. things like that. Those were my motivations then. But fortunately, God has changed me there.
When the change happened, I wondered, did you reconsider and say, look, my beliefs are now inconsistent with my duties as a pharmacist?
No, I don't think they're inconsistent with being a pharmacist at all. I mean, I still provide health care. I'm still there to heal, to counsel patients. So I'm not neglecting duties as a pharmacist. And it's the same way. Your pharmacists have always refused to dispense prescriptions if they felt that those prescriptions would harm the patient. In my view, this is no different. The only question is which patient am I talking about?
Gene Hurt, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gene Hurd joined us from the studios of member station KERA in Dallas, Texas. For the other side of the debate, we go now to Deborah Ortiz, a state senator from California. She's written legislation that would require pharmacists to dispense all prescriptions except in specified circumstances. And she joins us now from member station KXJZ in Sacramento, California. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me.
So why the need for this legislation? Is this a problem in California?
It is a problem. This legislation is designed to protect the rights of pharmacists who want to exercise a conscience clause provision, as your speaker does, but it also honors and respects the right of a patient to what is now a lawful prescription in the state of California and needs to be dispensed in a timely manner. What we're hoping to do here is allow persons like Mr. Herr to write ahead of time to their employer, let them know that they have a conscience clause provision that they'd like to exercise. That allows the employer an opportunity to create alternative mechanisms and a protocol in the instance where Mr. Herr refuses that rape victim the right to a prescription, that there is a protocol he hands her and allows her or her, the person assisting her within that 72-hour window of time, a place to have a lawful prescription filled to honor that obligation to serve in the medical obligation.
And again, that 72-hour period, that's the time that the medicine is effective, and in fact, it's much more effective the quicker you take it.
Absolutely. And, it's not, many can have a debate whether or not conception begins at conception or implantation. The point is, this is a legally protected right. And the example cited is it's so sad to know. I mean, this, who knows the circumstances of any rape victim or not a rape victim? The point is, this is a legally protected, medically safe, and in fact, creates a greater risk if a woman fails to receive EC or emergency contraceptive in that window of time.
Now, Mr. Herr's pharmacy, where he used to work just outside of Dallas, there's obviously a lot of drugstores around there. The situation is pretty different in a lot of rural communities.
Absolutely. And that it's the same debate we've had on abortion. California has a law that protects a doctor from providing abortion by exercising the conscience clause. We want to honor and respect Mr. Herr in this instance as well. However, it is a major inconvenience in rural parts of California or people who have limited coverage or they can't find a doctor to get a prescription that is required to be delivered to the pharmacist. It is another major obstacle to women making a decision about their bodies and their lives.
And what are you hearing from your constituents about this?
Well, I think in California we have had a healthy debate when we had this discussion around hospitals that are Catholic hospitals or religious hospitals not wanting to provide abortions and honoring and respecting that ideological, philosophical, religious conscience objection. And we created accommodations to still protect the rights of women. We're having that debate again in California with a horrible story and examples that we've seen of a woman and her husband who were interviewed just recently a couple of days ago, who had a really horrible situation in which they weren't provided emergency contraception. She had had a DNC or had a miscarriage and needed to have the medication to finalize that miscarriage. And it was very traumatic for her. So it's a new debate around the same issue, but we're trying to accommodate and respect those conscience concerns, but at the same time protect women's rights.
Mm-hmm. If a pharmacist feels that he cannot comply with this, is there a penalty?
My bill is silent as to a penalty. There certainly are the Board of Pharmacy and others would take up that question because they do govern all of the business practices and business profession.
This would be a state board?
Correct. The State Board of Pharmacy. We're silent as to a penalty. What we're simply asking is people like Mr. Herr ahead of time to put in writing to their employer, provide them notification that they have this, you know, conscience problem with dispensing emergency contraception. That way it allows the employer to establish a protocol at that pharmacy that then is laid out that when these instances arise that the person seeking the prescription then has a timely means of finding a prescription nearby and in a timely manner. We don't want them to have to worry what happens when one wants to exercise their conscience clause. A patient ought not to have to suffer. A woman ought not to have to suffer.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
That was State Senator Deborah Ortiz from California. She joined us from the studios of member station KXJZ in Sacramento. Well, when we come back from a short break, we'll begin taking your calls. We'd especially like to hear from health professionals who've had to deal with this issue. And, of course, we'd like to hear from those of you who have faced this problem firsthand. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking today about the conflict. Pharmacists who refuse to dispense medications they find morally repugnant, primarily birth control pills and emergency contraception, and women who have a right to the medications their doctor has prescribed. We want to hear from you now. What's happening on this issue where you live? How do you balance religious morals against reproductive rights? And, of course, we'd especially like to hear the stories of those who've had to deal with this problem firsthand from either side of the pharmacy counter. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from Capitol Hill is NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Neil.
Why is this controversy heating up now?
Well, there's a group called Pharmacists for Life International that's actually out pushing a lot of these laws in a number of states. There's about nearly a dozen states this year that are considering what are called conscience clause laws or refusal laws to apply to pharmacists. Now, most states have what we call conscience clause laws that apply to doctors and nurses and say that they can't be required to participate in any procedure that they find, you know, ethically, that they object to morally. Mm-hmm. It's not clear in all of these states whether pharmacists are or are not included, and that's what a lot of the pharmacists are working towards. And then we've seen, of course, the converse, as in California, a number of states are actually looking at requiring pharmacists to provide prescriptions.
And as Senator Ortiz was talking about, did this arise, those other settlements, from the cases of Catholic hospitals and abortions, that sort of thing?
Yes and no. I mean, that's certainly what's driving some of this. Certainly there's a feeling that the right to life movement in general is sort of flexing its muscles more these days in light of the elections last year, although the anecdotes about women not just not being able to get emergency contraception but not being able to get regular birth control pills, that dates back a year or two. It certainly does seem to be growing. There's more groups that are trying to keep track of it now.
Mm-hmm. But this is primarily about the morning after pill, or does it include other birth control methods?
Oh, no, it's not just about the morning after pill. It includes regular birth control pills, which, as the pharmacist at the top of the show accurately suggested, I mean, both the morning after pill is just regular birth control pills in very high doses. You take two of them 12 hours apart, mm-hmm. Obviously as soon as possible works best, but you can take them up to 5 days after unprotected intercourse. But in that case, in both cases, they can work by preventing the implantation of a fertilized egg. They can also work by preventing fertilization or by preventing ovulation also. But they're one of the mechanisms in which both of them work is by preventing the implantation into the uterus of that fertilized egg. There are some people who consider that the earliest form of abortion. Now, obviously, most of the medical profession says that pregnancy begins at implantation, which is why they consider both of these methods to be contraception and not abortion. This is not medical abortion, the abortion pill that we've heard so much about. That, by the way, is not involved in this argument at all, because that cannot be dispensed by pharmacists. That can only be dispensed by doctors, because it needs to be taken in a doctor's presence.
Here's an email question we have from Tracy A. in Minneapolis. What if a pharmacist decides not to fill scripts for AZT or other AIDS drugs because the person may have contracted the disease from behavior the pharmacist finds objectionable? What about the person who's taking meds for emphysema, cancer, or other diseases that are generally caused by smoking or drinking? A slippery slope indeed.
That's indeed one of the arguments that those who oppose these conscience clause laws have been making, that it's primarily birth control or things related to abortion, but not exclusively, that perhaps the pharmacist might refuse to fill AIDS prescriptions. Apparently, there was a case where pharmacists refused to fill a prescription for Ritalin for a child with ADD because the pharmacist didn't believe that that was moral. So it is not exclusively related to these right to life issues.
Mm-hmm. And in that case, as Gene Herr told us, his obligation is not to fill any prescription he feels is going to hurt the health of his patient.
Well, this is one of the sort of trickiest elements to this entire debate. The question is, what is the role of the pharmacist as a medical professional? As a pharmacist I spoke to last week, who does not dispense birth control pills, suggested to me, when we find medical errors and we discover that the doctor has written down the name of the wrong drug or the wrong dosage or doesn't realize that the patient is taking another drug that could conflict with it, he said, we're heroes when we find those. But when we refuse to dispense these birth control pills, then we're healed. So on the one hand, these are not just people who count pills and put them in a bottle. They are trained medical professionals, and they are expected to use some amount of their medical training in determining how to fill these prescriptions. On the other hand, should the pharmacist be able to get in the way or in between the physician-patient relationship? If the physician and the patient have talked something through, the physician has written a prescription, is it really the pharmacist's role to say, I'm not going to give that to you?
Mm-hmm. Here's an email, again, going back to the subject of the slippery slope, Viagra for single men. This is an email from Holly. What about single men in a small town where the pharmacist refuses to fill a prescription for the man because he thinks he should not be having sex when not married? This, she says, has happened in my small town.
Yes, and the converse has happened. There are pharmacists, there are doctors who won't give prescriptions to unmarried women for the pill for basically the same reason. So it's not exclusively something that happens to women. And as we say, it's not exclusively about abortion.
Here's another email, this from Jennifer. As a pharmacist, I'd like to give my opinion. I have no problem with the majority of oral contraceptives because their major mechanism of action is to prevent ovulation and thus conception. The major mechanism of action for the morning after pill, however, is to prevent implantation, which occurs after conception. Because of this, I have moral difficulties with dispensing this prescription, which my employer has accommodated. I realize my personal stand will not prevent the patient from receiving the prescription, but feel that I cannot personally participate. And again, that was the distinction you were talking about earlier.
Yes, and that's really how these conscience clauses are supposed to work under most of these state laws, is that an individual is not required to do something that he or she doesn't believe in. But as a medical professional, they have an obligation to make sure that the patient gets it some other way.
Okay, let's get a listener on the line. Our number, if you'd like to join us again, is 800-989-8255. And let's go to Sandy. Sandy's calling from Missouri.
Hi, I'm real nervous, and I'll try to make it really quick. I just wanted to make my voice known. I can't have an opinion. I'm not. All I am is a rape victim from 2003 in Missouri, and when you're raped and almost murdered, you generally aren't thinking about picking up a prescription. I sent someone, and thankfully they filled mine, and I'm no longer Catholic because I know that the Catholic Church is pretty hard line on that, and for me it was something that I had to do and wanted to do, and it's beyond my imagination that that would have been denied to me. I'm just hearing this is really upsetting. A lot of rape victims are in no condition to pick up their own prescription, much less for weeks afterwards, especially if they never thought that they would see the light of day again, that they're going to be able to fill it within 72 hours. And, I understand the idea that conception begins, but that's why I had to leave the church, because as a rape victim, I couldn't go through with some kind of pregnancy if I were. So that's all I have to say, and I'm sorry my state's considering this new legislation.
I wonder, Sandy, did your friend have any difficulty filling the prescription?
No, thank God. I had no idea that that would even be a problem. And I found out later that, you know, where I live, which is actually in a city, we only have two hospitals where rape kits are done. And you go to the hospital and you wait quite a while for the nurse to be called in from her home who's qualified to do the rape kit. This is the case in lots of places, in lots of actually big cities in our country, small towns I can't even imagine. And I just, you have to remember that when someone's been raped, I can't believe that people aren't thinking more clearly about this on the other end, because I certainly needed all of my friends around me to help me out, and I couldn't have gone to a pharmacy mm-hmm. to go pick up a prescription with wounds and whatnot. I don't know. A lot of people respect life and have certain moral values, and I think that I don't think it should be up to a pharmacist.
Sandy, thank you very much for the call. I know that wasn't easy.
No, it wasn't. Thank you.
Hang in there.
Bye.
Okay. Julie Rovner, cases like Sandy's are what is prompting states like California to adopt this legislation that would require pharmacists to fill this out.
Indeed. There's also an ongoing fight over exactly what the caller was talking about. There are Justice Department guidelines, U.S. Justice Department guidelines about how to deal with rape victims, and they came out and they don't mention the availability of emergency contraception, and that has caused a lot of women's rights advocates to get very upset. And that, I believe the last time I checked, that fight is still ongoing.
Let's go to another caller. This is Mary. Mary's calling from Provo, Utah.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Okay, my comment is that I feel that the consumer should have just as much of a, you know, like they have this personal conviction of what they want to consume, that the pharmacist, you know, if they don't want to, you know, dispense it, they shouldn't have to, and that the consumer should have a personal relationship with their pharmacist as they do with their doctor. You know, it's just as important to go to the doctor and get the prescription as it is to go to the pharmacist and to, you know, to have it filled. So if there's a pharmacist that, you know, feels that, you know, a moral obligation to not dispense something, that they shouldn't have to, you know, that I don't think that there should be laws passed that say this pharmacy has to do this and this pharmacy doesn't, you know, because it's, you know, owned by somebody that, you know, operates it, and they have morals just as the person that wants some kind of contraceptive or some kind of, you know, morning after pill, you know. So there are how many pharmacies and how many drugstores in every supermarket on every corner, you know, that you can find a pharmacist that you can have a relationship with as you do with your doctor, so that you both feel comfortable with what is being prescribed and what is being dispensed.
What would you think, Mary, about the kind of legislation that Senator Ortiz was telling us about earlier, where if a pharmacist did have moral objections, all they would have to do is then hand the customer a sheet of paper providing their alternatives?
I think that would be good, but they would probably, you know, I think they should go back to their doctor, you know. It's like,
what if they're visiting Provo, Utah from St. Louis or someplace?
Well, then there should be some kind of training. Pharmacists, you know, are just as smart as rocket scientists. You know, they know what the drugs do. They haven't gone to medical school, you know, but, you know, with an on-call doctor handing them, you know, saying this is what the... I think that would be okay, personally, yes, because if I'm out visiting, you know, back east, because I'm from, you know, from Delaware, I would, you know, and I needed some kind of prescription, you know, and the pharmacist suggested this, I would like to be able to trust the pharmacist that he or she knows what they are doing, so, you know, because they do know what they're doing, and I would, and that's me personally, you know, so mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Okay, Mary, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Julie... all these kinds of provisions, I guess, are coming up in these various debates in state legislatures.
Absolutely. And there are lots of, for instances, I mean, obviously, if you're in a big city, you can always go to another pharmacy. But if you are in a small town or in a rural area, sometimes there is only one pharmacy that's, you know, legitimately close to you. Also, in the case of emergency contraception, obviously, it needs to be taken as soon as possible. It works best if it's taken within 12 hours. And if you have to go find another pharmacy, you can actually, you know, miss that window for it to work, and you can actually end up needing an abortion.
We're talking with NPR's Julie Rovner, and we're talking about the issue that is prompted by the debate in drugstores today. Pharmacists who object with moral objections to dispensing certain kinds of medications that they believe forces them to participate in abortions against the rights of women who say that they have a right to properly prescribed medication, that this is an issue of patients' rights, indeed women's rights. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Joan. Joan's calling from Arkansas.
Yes, I just called because I was fortunate enough years ago in college to have had a sympathetic medical provider who allowed me in morning after contraceptive. And I teach young women and have daughters, and I can't imagine what it would have to be like for a young woman to return to a pharmacy after having a traumatic event that made them feel that they need this. And my other point was that many pharmacists are self-employed, especially in rural areas like where I live, and some of these laws would not protect women who had no other choice or no transportation. And I guess at the time the prescription is written and filled, there is only one patient involved. In most cases, high probability, there will be no conception at all anyway.
How many drugstores are there in around where you live, Joan?
I live in a large community where there are, but there are many communities out in rural Arkansas where there would only be one supplier.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks very much for the phone call, John. We appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Julie, the debate over this morning after pill is holding up a nomination of Lester Crawford to be the new commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. Tell us about that and the role of the FDA in approving the morning after pill in over-the-counter sales.
Well, interestingly, if the FDA did approve the morning after pill to be sold over the counter without a prescription, it might actually, or if they approve the application they have now, it might make this problem worse. Let me go back a little bit. An FDA advisory committee recommended overwhelmingly at the end of 2003 that the morning after pill was safe enough to be sold without a prescription. It actually is sold without prescription in a couple of states now. The FDA did not follow through on that recommendation as it normally does. Last spring, it actually declined under some amount of pressure from Right to Life lawmakers and some other groups, although the FDA said at the time that it didn't have enough evidence about the safety of the drug on girls under age 16. So the company that makes the drug went back in July and they said, okay, how about we allow it to be sold without a prescription to people 16 and over and with a prescription for those who are younger. Well, the FDA had never really looked at that before, so they had another 6 months to discuss that amongst themselves. Decision was due in January, and on the day that the decision was due, the FDA basically put out a terse little statement that said that a decision has been delayed. Now, Lester Crawford has been the acting commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration since last year when Martin McClellan, who had been the head of the FDA, went over to run the Medicare program. Crawford had also been the acting administrator before Martin McClellan went to the FDA. Dr. Crawford was indeed appointed or nominated by the president to become the permanent administrator. However, there are several women senators, led by Patty Murray of Washington, Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York, asked him some pretty pointed questions about this at his confirmation hearing. They had a meeting with him yesterday afternoon, and when he basically wouldn't give them an actual day when there would be a decision on allowing this to go over the counter, they said that they would put a hold on his nomination. Now, in fact, it's hard to know how much impact that will have since he's already the acting commissioner. So he is already running the FDA. It's just whether he has the official title or not. But what's interesting is that if the FDA approves the application in front of them now to allow it to be sold without prescription to women over age 16, it will probably they'll have to ask a pharmacist for it. So it will be basically behind the counter, as they put it, not mm-hmm. so much over the counter. And so these pharmacists who object to selling it would be made easier for them to object to selling it because, after all, the women don't even need a prescription anymore. The pharmacist can just say no.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, the senators have said, look, we believe one way, but just make a decision. When you make a decision, we'll vote on your appointment.
Yes, and that's clearly there. I think the frustration is with the delay, that there are obviously the FDA doesn't always meet its deadlines, but in this case, there's concern that this is being politically motivated. There's been concern from the beginning that the decision was politically motivated because the advisory committee voted so overwhelmingly that these medications are safe enough to be sold without prescription. So that I think there's a lot of frustration on the part of people who would like to see this be sold over the counter. Again, because time is of the essence, particularly with these pills, it's considered to be enhancing for women to be able to take them.
Julie Robner, thanks as always.
You're welcome.
Julie Robner, NPR health policy correspondent, joined us from NPR's booth on Capitol Hill. When we come back from the break, we'll go to Rome, where 4 million mourners have arrived for the funeral of John Paul II. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.